We're so close to the Pentagon. Sometimes they ask us to get the coffee. This is Warbird Radio.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the all-new Warbird Radio Live channel. We're happy to be back on the air right across from the runway at Washington Reagan International Airport. Be sure and tune in Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern each week for Warbird Radio Live, followed by a new episode of one of our top-tier shows like the R.C. Scale Builder Show, Hartman and Hines, Over the Front, and the all-new Texas Warbird Report and Wings Over New Zealand Show. Listen, this station is all about community, so please join up with us on Tuesday nights and call in and become part of the fun and part of the family. Thanks again for tuning in, and join us Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
Hello, hello, hello! This is Mike Buzzard Hartman. I'm here with Andy Ace Hines. Andy, say hi.
Well, hello, Andy.
Oh, that's just so funny.
Now, welcome, everybody. We're glad to have you back. We're glad to be back.
Oh, my gosh. It's been too long. Here we are, long-awaited Hartman and Hines show. Andy, who do we have today?
Well, we have two guests today.
Two? Holy cow, we're getting popular.
Two of them.
Oh, my God.
Yep. That's the only two people that we could find with a three-month notice to even come on.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, who do we got?
You know, I don't even remember.
Oh, my gosh.
Do you remember?
I think, I'm pretty sure, we have Scooter Yoke on the show tonight, Quicksilver P-51 flyer. And then later on, we're going to have Dewey Davenport talking about his barnstorming carnival.
Okay, all right. Well, that should be an interesting show.
Yes, yes. Matt, are you there in the newsroom?
I am in the newsroom, standing by.
So good to hear your voice. It's like butter. It's like butter.
I got to go get a drink. You guys have fun. I'm not even going to hide it.
Scott Yoke, are you there?
I am here, guys. What's going on?
What's up, buddy? How's it going?
Well, you know, it's going. It's going. It's a fabulous evening here in West by God, Virginia, and he just can't pay for weather like this, you know?
It's rainy here.
Yeah, rainy and miserable. It's headed your way.
Oh, well, that sucks. So you guys should be here. It's a lot nicer here. So,
let me ask you, we just had the 4th of July. What did you do on the 4th of July? Did you fly at all?
You know, I did. I did fly on the 4th of July. We are 4th of July weekend, I should say, because it was, massive quantities of rainstorms around here. World parted ways on the 4th, so we could shoot off fireworks. But we did the all American tradition of obviously the fireworks. But we flew a Cub. You know, we decided to go low and slow and burn virtually nothing for gas and fool around and enjoy and committed aviation, if you will, in a Cub.
So, great. Great. We all like flying the Cub every once in a while.
Oh, yeah.
Can't argue with that.
Nope.
Hey,
go ahead, Mike.
Hey, why don't you give us a little background on your flying? When did you start? What have you flown? All that good stuff leading up to you.
Sure. Well, I got my license in 2002, and right now I'm flying on the air show circuit with Quicksilver, my P-51, and my day job is I'm a Warbird fabrication specialist here in Lewisburg, West Virginia, specializing in sheet metal more than anything, but I do just a little bit of everything, jack of all trades and only master of about one of them. And anyways, that's what we do day in and day out. And my hobby, for the lack of words, is air shows. I'm 21 air shows this year performing in the airplane. I've been surface level now for 3 years or 4 years, excuse me, going on 4 years. And, just out having fun and displaying the airplane like we think it should be displayed. So,
well, how did you get into the sheet metal business?
Well, same way I got into the Warbird business, good sir. I was born into it. My dad had been doing it for umpteen million years. You know, whenever these airplanes first started coming on the civilian sector back in the early 60s, and been here ever since. He has been here ever since, and I just picked it up from him, just working with it over the years, and I was raised in a sheet metal shop. So
is most of the work done on Warbird sheet metal, or do you do antiques, or a little bit of everything?
I do a little bit of everything. Occasionally, we'll make a cowling for a classic aircraft or an antique aircraft, but primarily, what we focus on is compound forming of aluminum for and some stainless. We'll make some exhaust spillways and stuff like that for aircraft, but primarily a sheet metal on warbirds, and that's what keeps the lights on, and that's what we love doing. So,
well, that sounds like an interesting business because you got something different all the time that you're working on, obviously.
Absolutely, and you know, we can walk in and literally, like this morning when I walked into our shop, we have a G model Cessna 150, a Stearman, and a P-51 that's not mine, another P-51 that's in there. And it shows the variety that, you know, we come in and do everything from annual inspections to sheet metal fabrication and everything in between, you know. Everything short of overhauling the engine, which we only do a minor part of, and only small engines, but still, that's just a little niche of the business that we like doing. So,
okay. Well, because I know, you know, my passion, of course, is Waco aircraft, grown and raised with those. And everybody's always looking for someone to build aluminum wheel pants for Wacos and bump cowls. That's
really?
The two main things.
And speaking
I'll
of
I'll be
which,
doggone. Well, you know what? We might want to keep in touch because that's something right up our alley. We made a set of aluminum wheel fairings for a Stinson 105, believe it or not. I've never even seen a Stinson 105. I mean, that stuff's right up our alley. We've made fairings for, wheel pan fairings for a bull steerman. And if that's anything close to what a Waco would be, well, I think it would be something up our alley.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you actually flew a Waco F2, didn't you? As I go back through some pages.
I did a little bit. We took care of one before the owner sold it, and that was really sort of our first Waco. I had dealings with a couple YMFs a couple years ago, but the F2 was sort of my first hands-on. The shorter answer to your question was yes, but that was sort of our learning curve to Wacos, if you will. So.
Okay, cool.
Well, that's a good one to learn on.
why don't you tell us a little bit about Quicksilver? I'm sure everybody out there wants to hear about the airplane. Give us a little bit of a history on Quicksilver there, if you will, sir.
Sure. It was a 15-year restoration by my father and I. I grew up building the airplane, literally my entire childhood and into the first part of college was building this airplane. It was a long restoration, and it was acquired. We went all around the world to find parts for this airplane and acquired that we could count over 200 different aircraft that we took parts off of to either put on this aircraft or to fabricate or to use as a pattern.
Holy
cow. Build Quicksilver. So to say it was a massive undertaking would probably be pretty accurate. So when it came time to build this aircraft, one of the number one things that authentic, loving people notice about it is that it is a non-authentic paint scheme. And the reason for that was, since it was made out of all these airplanes, and literally all the dash number ranges of the 51 are on there. Now, granted, the D-model Mustang did not change that much from the beginning to the end. But all of the parts that are on this airplane, we're just sitting there thinking, you know, we can't just pick one crew with one squadron with one pilot. We want to try to give back to them all, for the lack of words. So our paint scheme is made to honor and it's a flying celebration of our nation's veterans. Okay, every symbol and marking on it stands for something. It's very very well laid out. Very 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 planned out. We didn't just say, hey, look, this looks good or that looks good. You know, we polished the fuselage for a reason. We said that we polished the fuselage so you can look into it and see for whom our veterans fought for. That along those lines, if you get what I'm saying. So.
Now, does your dad fly the airplane?
He did, yes. We lost my dad back in March of 2013 due to cancer, but he flew it one time. That was the test flight of the airplane, and he hung it up because he was like, look, I've got decades worth of hours in Mustangs and other warbirds, and it's your turn. It's my turn to pass the torch on to you and let youth thrive in the warbird community.
That's great. That's great. And what other warbirds have you flown, Scott?
I fly an L-39 with the Black Diamond Jet Team.
Okay.
And obviously the T-6 and Stearman and a lot of the other ones. But the Mustang is the only piston-driven fighter that I'm in right now. Hopefully that'll change soon. But the L-39 is the turbine warbird that I'm flying right now. So.
Would you like to elaborate on the hopefully that will change soon?
Say again?
Would you like to elaborate on when you said hopefully that will change soon? Is there
there's always with you know in maintaining these aircraft and opening doors. You know, the warbird industry, as you know, or the antique classic industry, it's a very small industry. Everybody knows everybody, but they've never met everybody. If that makes sense, but the doors that are opening up to me in the next few months are possibly a P-40 and a Corsair. So that's something I'm looking forward to, and it'd be an honor to fly these airplanes. It's just two of my other favorite airplanes other than a Mustang. So,
yeah, that'd be really interesting. I mean, I understand what you say about the doors opening. You know, after you become known in a circle of aviation enthusiasts, then you know, I mean, Mike and I both have had the chance to fly a lot of different antique airplanes just because people knew who we were. You know, so it's always been
interesting.
Absolutely, yep. You know, so unbelievable. One thing I wanted to ask you about, and I noticed this when you first got the airplane done and were taking it to some of the air shows and everything like that, that the one thing I noticed that stood out different from you as compared to all the other Warbird owners is that you were actually inviting people to come up and sit in the airplane all the time.
Absolutely. We wanted to we wanted to give back and share this aircraft with the American public. That was my dad's mission. He wanted to give back, and the only way he knew how to give back to the people that had supported not only the warbird industry but the airshow industry and just aviation in general. Because if you're coming to an airshow, you're obviously genuinely interested in what's going on, okay? And his way of sharing what he had at the time, which was this P-51, was to let people sit in it, because not everybody gets a chance to sit in a P-51. And that was his favorite thing to do. And then whenever I started flying shows, when I started flying in the shows, we started slowing it down, because, you know, I mean, letting people get in and out of the cockpit, you want to try to keep the cockpit as sterile as you can if you're going to fly. There were a couple FOD instances in the cockpit, people leaving objects that we caught before we flew. But, I mean, still, at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, we gradually ramped it down over time. So one of these days, we are planning possibly next year at Oshkosh to do it for 2 or 3 days, just kind of like a, you know, kind of like a throwback thing. But we might even do it on the 10-year anniversary of the airplane flying. But we'll see. That's still up in the air.
Yeah, I could see that if you were definitely flying a show, you definitely wouldn't want a lot of people getting in and out of the airplane because, you know, people tend to hit things or flip something on that they don't realize they're doing or whatever, you know, and then it's almost like you got to do a major pre-flight before you get ready to go, you know, on the show.
Big time. I found, you know, cups in the intake. I found children's toys in the wheel well, you know, multiple things in the cockpit. I mean, I can't even count the number of stuff there. But, you know, and it was just kind of one of those things where, okay, well, maybe we should, if we're going in a different direction with our airship performances, we should probably ramp one side of it down, which was the letting everybody sit into it. You know, sit in it, excuse me, I should say.
Right. So I'm assuming you're heading to Oshkosh next week?
I am, yes. I'm going to Geneseo this weekend, and I have Niagara Falls the next weekend, those two shows. And then Sunday, after Niagara Falls, after I fly, I literally head out and go across Canadian airspace nonstop to Oshkosh that Sunday. So I will be there. I will literally be there Monday through Sunday.
Okay. All right. Well, I will definitely stop by and try to say hi to you. Mike won't be coming.
Please,
to Oshkosh.
Please do. I will be between either the depends on which day whether I'm flying in the show or not. But I'll either be over in the Mustang Corral or show center in the hot area. So
yeah.
One or two ways. Just I mean, to find. I usually walk around in Quicksilver attire.
So. Scooter, it's Matt, and I want to apologize to you because we told Mike that you offered him a ride, but since he can't be there this year, I just wanted to personally thank you because Mike's a great guy and he really is deserving. But I understand. So
really,
but thank
really,
you, thank
really
you for that, Scooter.
Going through my head right now, man.
thank you very much for offering that, Scooter. So anyhow,
Scott, I got some time in the T6s, and what I've heard this, I don't know if it's true or not, but which is more difficult to land? I've heard some people saying the T6 is a little more squirrely, and the P-51 sets down a little easier. I mean, in your experience, what do you think?
The 51 definitely sets down easier, but you have to look at it this way. The reason why you would want to, I'm sort of answering your question with a story, if that makes any sense. So the reason why people say that is it's two completely different airplanes. You really can't even put them in the same category. Okay. Yes, the 51 definitely touches down a lot smoother. It's what happens afterwards that you need to be ready for. The T6, obviously, the tail coming down, the airplane's going to be a little squirrelier. It's going to, especially if you start having crosswind issues, even with a steerable tail wheel. But people can argue that all the time. But until you fly the airplane and understand it, that's sort of a mute subject, for the lack of words. The 51, I would say, by far, is easier to land. But the problem and the difference between going from a T6 to a Mustang is definitely the power. Okay, when we touch down, one of the things that I have people do in a T6, when I check them out, and especially if they have aspirations of a fighter, is on one of the touch and goes we'll do is we will literally wait till the aircraft's in a 3-point attitude, depending on whether we're doing a 3-point landing or a wheel landing, and then I will initiate a go around. I'll say, okay, all three wheels are on the ground right now, go around. It's not a touch and go. It's look, the tail wheel's down. Okay, now go around. If you do that in a 51, if you do it the same way you're doing in a T6. You will hurt yourself and or the airplane. You don't fly a Mustang like a T6, and you don't fly a T6 like a Mustang. I completely 100% disagree with that. With the theory that you can relate the two. The T6 is harder to manage in all regimes on the ground. The 51 can be a handful, but it's in different ways. If you let the Mustang even get for a second ahead of you on landing, which I don't know why you would, but if you did, you probably wouldn't have enough authority to correct it. T6, you could probably make it work out. Okay, you get a little break here, a little break there, little power here, a little power there. 51, not really. Once you let the airplane get ahead of you, it's going to stay ahead of you. The big thing my dad used to tell me is you need in a P-51 you need to be proactive, not reactive. If you react to something that you're feeling with the aircraft, you're already behind it. And T6, not so much. You can sort of relax a little bit with a T6, but you still have to be on your game. I know that's kind of contradictory, but a 51 is easy to land, but as long as you're ahead of it, of course, everything's easy to land once you're ahead of it.
Excellent. Very good. I've had several people ask me about that and to ask you, and that was awesome description. Thank you very much.
Well, Mike flew around with North American Top Gun for a while with the T6s, giving rides and all that type of thing. And so he's, certainly has some experience flying the T6, but
absolutely.
Of course, neither one of us have ever flown anything, with that kind of horsepower.
More power, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the thing I tell people about flying a 51, the hard part about flying a 51 is systems management. Okay, you have a lot more going on in the cockpit. Look, flying the airplane is elementary.
Yeah.
Two things that'll get you hurt severely in a 51 is not managing your systems. And I say systems, you have to think about it. You have four fluid systems, okay? There's very few aircraft in the world that have four different individual fluid systems, okay? You have that, and then slow-speed flight is what kills people. When I diagrammed back in 2013, when I came up with a pie chart, if you will, of fatal versus non-fatal accidents in the 51, the fatal accidents, the number one killer was not go-arounds, what everybody thinks it is. The number one thing that was a fatal killer was aerobatics at altitudes greater than 5,000 feet. And
okay.
when people hear that, they usually think. So we've had 124 accidents since 1949 in the civilian sector, 50 of which have been fatal. Out of those 50, at least I don't remember the exact numbers, either 18 or 19 of those have been stall spin accidents above 5,000 feet.
Wow. Okay. And what would be the cause of that?
When the Mustang, when you depart a 51, if you depart it really hard, it's 1,000 feet per turn in the spin.
Wow.
And you're probably not going to get it out in less than three turns.
Wow. Okay.
Yes. So that's something also to think about. One of the big things that, like, whenever I was getting checked out in the 51, Bob Odegaard's a gentleman that checked me out in it. He was very, very enthusiastic about having me fly the airplane in the slow speed envelope and feeling what it does. Okay. Flying the wing is difficult, but look, once you're, you know, don't do anything stupid in the airplane and you're not going to die. That's about as straightforward as it's going to be.
Well said.
How hard is it? How much torque? How much this? Look, I don't, you know, I when they say how much right rudder do you use on takeoff? Enough. I don't know. I just push it and it goes straight.
It's you know, Scooter,
it's, I'll use barely more than a bonanza.
I'm listening to all this, and you guys are missing the point. I mean, it's just like it is, only a little bit more difficult in the Tiger Moth. I just wanted to point that out.
Oh, the fire-breathing
Tiger. You nailed it.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, if I flew the Mustang like a Tiger Moth.
The fire-breathing Tiger Moth.
I would say that.
Yeah. I mean, it's all the same. It's all the same.
The unlimited horsepower of a Tiger Moth.
Yeah, anybody can fly a Waco. Anybody can fly a Waco.
Nothing like hanging Tiger Moth on the prop.
That's right. That's right. Unbelievable amounts
of
left.
I will say this. You know, I will say this, and whatever, you don't hang up and throw stuff at me, but you guys really need to get rid of the training wing, okay? Seriously. You had enough. You guys got it right. You guys really need to move on to the non-training wing area. You need to be, like, more monoplane guys, okay?
I just wanted to jump in and say something about your dad, because your dad was such a an influential figure in so many lives, and I enjoyed getting to know him and just think the world of both of you, as you know, Scooter. But I would encourage anybody that wants to hear more about Bill Yoke to go back and listen to some of our older shows, because he's in there a lot, and you can hear some really cool stuff. Mike, the dude flew on Baba Black Sheep.
Nice.
And, I mean, just so many different shows. And Scooter, you know, he lives and breathes this stuff. So he is the next generation of that. And that's how we met Scooter, was having him on our Young Gun show back, when we got started. And now he's an old man flying these things. So
that was a long time ago.
Yeah. Now you're flying for the Hoover tribute and everything else. So cool, man. Hope you come by the trailer. I know you will. That sounds really terrible, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I hope you come by the trailer.
Yeah. Hey, man, I hope you come by the trailer. We're going to have some fun.
Yeah. You need to change. Look, you can say the same word, or you can say the same sentence and not use that word. You can say, hey, why don't you come by headquarters at Oshkosh?
Yeah, come by.
Nobody has to know the trailer match, Ollie.
Just come by the trailer. You know, look, there are more millionaires and trailers at Oshkosh that week than anywhere else on Earth.
Why don't you call it, like, the Bat Trailer or something cool? I mean, the trailer sounds like you're in a park.
Well, it is. It's just the trailer, you know? It's just the trailer. I am but a pauper. Among everyone,
and I would
else.
Just like to say to anybody listening, if you see a mushroom cloud over in Camp Scholler, that's us. I apologize
ahead
of time.
You.
Okay, we're used to, like, camping in warbirds, and we're used to hanging out like warbird people. So if you see a mushroom cloud in Camp Scholler, that's probably us. Don't worry about it. It's either
you or I'll leave the guy in the Twin Beach alone. But I won't mention his name. But yeah, that's good. Well, okay, well, fun. I'll bow back out and keep sipping over here. By the way, I tried writing you guys a number. To read out, but nobody's at home in the studio in Dayton. So the call-in number tonight, if you'd like to join the conversation with Scooter over the next 8 minutes, is 478-787-4768. It's also in the player window. And I know somebody that'll answer the phone and make sure you get on the air tonight. So call in if you're listening tonight. You want to talk to Scooter Yoke. And God forbid, Hartman and Hines.
You know, man, he's being rough tonight.
That's all I'm saying.
We've heard about your flying experiences, and I don't think you want us to really bring that up on the radio.
Oh, I would love to.
Oh, that ought to be good.
Listen, I'm the only guy that I think has successfully aviated into Lewisburg, West Virginia in an L2 in the middle of January at about 8,500 feet. I remember your dad, Scooter, when I flew it that day, he goes, We never saw you because you were so high. I was so terrified of going over the Blue Ridge. I think I was like
10. Yeah, when you landed, we didn't know if you were flying an L2 or coming to fix our train air conditioning unit. You and your blue flying suit and white gloves and whatever the heck you were wearing. You look like the dude on the train air conditioning.
I had blue Zoom bag.
I had my blueberry suit.
That's nice.
I had my you know what, All America Mart, insulated thermal coveralls, because it's nice flying an L2 in the wintertime, you know?
You're probably wearing
It was cold.
Probably wearing a motorcycle helmet with a respirator on it, so you look like you were wearing a real flight helmet. Huh?
How many miles is it between the two airports? It's not far. It's like from Orange
to
Lewisburg.
Yeah, I don't know the exact.
It's not far.
Too far.
But I had to stop for
gas. As we say around here, it's just over the hill, Matt.
Yeah, it is over the hill, but I literally had to stop for gas because the headwinds were so strong. I think I had a 22-knot ground speed. Was supposed to be there for lunch. I didn't get there till 3 o'clock. That was my first trip over there.
So, you know, this isn't the Matt Jolly hour.
I know. I'm trying to shut up, and you keep bringing me on.
This is a Hartman and Hines show, and we're trying to interview Scott Yoke.
I'm going to just shut up. I'm sitting back.
Yeah, enough about you, Matt.
Yeah, drink your Yoo-Hoo, Sonny Boy.
I am. I'm going to drink my chocolate milk over here.
He's messing with the wrong DJs.
Yeah, he is.
All right. Call in and keep me busy. Let me answer the phone.
Oh, okay. Do we have a call?
No, not yet. I'm trying to get one. 478-787-4768.
Sliding y'all in the parking.
You know, I could step back in the bar and have one of these guys call it.
There's lots of people.
If it gets to that point, we could.
There's actually lots of people listening tonight. I'm kind of surprised. But anyhow, I'm going to shut up and drink. So have fun.
Okay, radio silence now. I totally lost track of where we're going.
Any time now, Mike.
Well, I have a question, because I know there's a lot of different schools of thought on the whole wheel landing versus three-point landing.
Oh, you're not going to do that, are you?
I just want to ask a question.
Oh, okay.
So on the Mustang, have you ever three-point landed the Mustang?
Yes, I have. When I first started out in the airplane, I did nothing but 3 points. And a silverback, for the lack of words, an experienced guy came over and pulled me off to the side, and I'll give you the PG version of it. He told me to stop it immediately. And I said, why? And he said, well, he was like, think about it. He was like, why are you three-pointing the airplane? And I said, why not? He says, well, he was like, there's 156 of these things flying. You misjudge it one time. How strong is the tail on a Mustang? Not very strong. Okay. You break the airplane because you want to do a three-point landing to whatever you want to call it, either ego or you think it's better or something like that. You are going to look like the gorilla in the room, for the lack of words. Okay. It's not smart to do in a 51. They're not. I know they used to do it back during the war, but hey, they used to also take off at, war emergency power too, but we don't do that anymore either. Okay. 3 point in a 51, it's not bad, but there's a lot that can go wrong at 51, 3 point. Remember I said if you do misjudge it, or if you do something like that, you could drop a wing, you could do something like that, but hey, look, I'm here to tell you that I have nothing against it. I just choose not to, because why? I mean, majority of the time when I take the 51 into a strip, it's 4,000 feet or longer. If I have to land shorter, I will. That's fine. But there's no reason to.
And Scooter, I don't want to interrupt you, but there is a caller if you guys want to take the caller. Because you're not responding to our – anyhow, there's a caller if you want it.
Oh, hey.
Well, go ahead.
Answer it. Welcome to the Hartman and Hilt Show.
A what?
Hey, Hilt Show.
Hines Show. Wow, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that was back
in
the day.
That's okay. It'll be Hines and Hines and Oshkosh. You're out.
I apologize.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, is this Matt Hartman, Hines, or Scooter?
Well, you've got all of us right now. Do you have a question for Scooter?
Well, I just, I've been listening to Warbird Radio off and on for a while, feeling bad that I've missed it a lot, and was calling to see You mentioned that you were going to be flying the P-40 and the Corsair possibly down the road. Was calling to see what other plans you had for next air show season.
Well, my plans for next air show season were really focusing on trying to be sponsored. I'd like to be the next sponsored Warbird on the air show circuit. So that's what we're really working towards. Other than that, another 20 plus show season. That's really focusing on the 51, because flying the P-40 and the Corsair right now, that's just more for personal gain, if that makes any sense. We wouldn't be flying those in an air show. That would just be for fun. But as for focus on next air show season, I'd like to have another successful air show season like what we've had in the past. You know, safe number one and number two. I'd like to expand to more cities. I think it would be great. You know, we're we already have 8 shows booked for next year, and a lot of those are sites that I have never been to, like Syracuse, New York. I've never flown at Syracuse. A couple other northern air shows and stuff like that. So if that answers your question, that's really my goal for next year.
To get sponsored. I know how important it is to have support from the community, and a sponsor is a good step.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, a sponsor would allow us to do a lot more with the aircraft than we're already doing. So that's like item number one on our list. That's what we're after. We're entertaining a couple companies right now, and fingers crossed, it looks good for next year, so we'll see.
Hey, thanks, caller. Do appreciate it.
You know, Matt, when we get callers, you can get their name and stuff so they can, you know, we can actually.
I think I know who that was.
Yeah, way to go, dude.
I think she wanted to be anonymous. So,
yeah. Roger, yeah. Got it.
A phantom caller tonight.
Phantom caller. We get a lot of those.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Just like the phantom hate mail.
That's right.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Andy.
Mom
says his restaurant bar would be willing to sponsor.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
There you go.
Scooter, you know, Andy does own a bar. So next time you're in Dayton,
no,
Ohio.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, next time you're in Dayton, Ohio, stop by and tell him Andy sent you.
I will. I'm just going to walk into the first bar I see in Dayton, Ohio, Matt Jolly, and tell him Andy sent you.
Tell him Andy sent you.
He's like Norm, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, you ought to swing down to Moraine Air Park sometime. And that's about all I have to say about that.
Okay.
You'll see when you get here. It's fun.
Oh, man.
Awesome. Yeah, that's another show I'd like to go back to. I did Dayton in 2012, and that's another show I'd like to do again, I should say. So.
Well, I have another question here for you. What's the shortest strip you've ever flown the P-51 into?
Shortest strip? I've flown it into a 3,500-foot strip. And you could, I could get it in shorter, but, you know, 35 really is my personal limit. I mean, anything lower than that, I mean, you got to ask yourself why. I mean, the beer's got to be pretty cold and pretty good for me to land at a 3,000-foot strip, so.
He can land over at Wright Brothers and drive over to Moraine. You know, 'cause the beer's not very cold at Moraine, you know.
And our airport is very unique, Scott, and that our scooter that we have a levee that surrounds our airport, about a 20-foot levee, so you'll get stopped without any problem.
That's right.
Oh, sweet!
This is the way
I would want to. We know, as they said, you know, if I had any class and then the Navy fighter, I could just drop the hook and stop shorter, but. You know, I have a lot of class, apparently, so it's all low. So.
Well, that's all right. You know, it's also the only airport that I've ever seen Chris Henry do a dive bomb onto the taxiway to get out of the way of a Waco coming by. But that'll happen, though.
You know, that'll happen.
That'll happen on occasion. Hey, guys, you got to take a break and then bring your next guest on. It's that time of night.
Hey, Scooter, it was great talking to you, man, and hopefully we'll see you around.
Hey, great talking to you guys as well, man. We'll see you guys at Oshkosh, hopefully.
I will not be there, but Andy will, and I'll catch up with you at some other point in time.
Yep,
probably, probably online and with Chris Hansen, but don't worry about that.
So, lordy. Have a good one, man.
Yep, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yep.
We're so close to the Pentagon. Sometimes they ask us to get the coffee. This is Warbird Radio.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the all-new Warbird Radio Live channel. We're happy to be back on the air right across from the runway at Washington Reagan International Airport. Be sure and tune in Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern each week for Warbird Radio Live, followed by a new episode of one of our top-tier shows like the R.C. Scale Builder Show, Hartman and Hines, Over the Front, and the all-new Texas Warbird Report and Wings Over New Zealand Show. Listen, this station is all about community, so please join up with us on Tuesday nights and call in and become part of the fun and part of the family. Thanks again for tuning in, and join us Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
Hello.
Hello.
We've got Dewey Davenport on the Hartman and Hines show here. We've got some technical difficulties. Do we still got music playing? Matt, are you there?
I'm here.
Hello. Welcome back to the Hartman and Hines show. We just got done talking with Scooter Yoke, and now we have the Dewey Davenport that's going to be in there to talk to us. Right, Andy?
Oh, I'm excited to have Dewey on. He's out flying a trip, and he took time out of that tonight to come on the radio and talk with us.
Thank you, Dewey. Are you there?
I am here. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Excellent.
Are you looking forward to this weekend?
I am. I'm a little bit nervous, but I'm definitely looking forward to it. So we'll have to see.
Well, why don't you tell everybody what you've got going on this weekend?
Give us the rundown on what you've done out there.
Well, we'll try to do the rundown here. Well, it's the second annual barnstorming carnival that I kind of organized last year. And it's a gathering of 1920s, 30s, and 40s vintage aircraft that kind of get together, come to the Springfield-Beckley Airport in Springfield, Ohio. And we kind of opened up the airport, allowed the public to come there and see these cool antique airplanes like Pete and Poles and, you know, my travelware and, you know, champs and cups and different things like that. And we gave biplane rides, or we're doing biplane rides and a couple kids activities and things like that. So kind of like a community awareness through the airport. And we're using the golden age of aviation to kind of teach people about the, you know, our old history and airplanes and about some cool airplanes that people still have today, like Moraine hats. So, yeah, you guys came last year and you could see, you know, last year was my first time having the event. We had a couple thousand people come, gave a lot of airplane rides, and the community really, really loved it. So this year we hope to have more of a crowd draw and maybe not too big of a crowd draw, though.
Dewey, it amazes me. You are a surgeon. I mean, you're amazing when it comes to putting these things together and PR and talking to people. And it's just the way you do things, you really do it in a great way. I mean, it's hard to say no, you know. Plus, you have a bounce house that's going to be there. And Andy and I are going to be doing that.
Yeah, we'll be there probably entertaining the crowd.
Well, we are going to have a bounce house competition for the Barnstormers. See who can do the most flips in 2 minutes.
And, nice.
If you win, you get a free ice cream cone from Young's Dairy. So
nice.
You guys better start practicing tonight, and you got like 3 or 4 days to get those front and back flips. You get 2 points for the back flips.
All right. And Dewey, I know all of our listeners want to know this when our guests come on, so I usually ask this to everybody. Give us a little rundown on who is Dewey Davenport. How'd you get started in aviation? What made you turn toward the Barnstormer thing? What kind of iron have you flown? And just kind of give us a rundown on Dewey.
Yeah, well, okay. I grew up in Jamestown, Ohio, from two hillbillies from West Virginia, my parents, and John and Lenora. But, you know, I started with model airplanes, building rubber band, and then, you know, building model rockets, rubber band airplanes, RC airplanes. And then in high school, I started flying full scale. Learned where most of the you guys talk about on your shows, I learned in Waynesville in a J3 Cub, and kind of progressed through my private, did my instrument commercial, and then, I started flying skydivers for Skydive Green County. I had 250 hours I was flying a Beach-18 around.
Wow.
And about 280 hours I was soloing it, and I didn't kill anybody or myself, so that was a blessing. flew Twin Otters, I flew Casa 212s, left there in 2000, flew for USA Jet Airlines for about 8 years, flying Falcon 20s, DC-9s, and then went to NetJets, flying Citation corporate-type aircraft. And, you know, really all in the midst of all this, you know, I still kept flying old airplanes. You know, I have a Champ. I had a farmer back in Jamestown who used to let me fly this airplane for probably 8-9 years for free. So I bought that airplane from him, and I try to do the same thing. There's one kid that grew up in Jamestown that got his license, and he pretty much gets to fly the airplane for free. I've been letting him do that for probably about 5 or 6 years. It's not a ton of hours. I have, you know, over 7,000 hours flying different stuff, and a lot of antique stuff. And as you guys know, I own a biplane ride business. So I started Good Folk and full-time biplane rides in the Dayton, Ohio area. I bought a 1929 Traveler. I've had it for 2 years now. And pretty much all last year, I kind of quit my job that I was working, and I went around barnstorming. And you guys seen me about everywhere, and helped me at your fly-ins and things, and let me come there and offer rides at your guys' at different events. But it's been a great experience, and, you know, something that really I'm glad I did and I needed to do. I've always wanted to own a biplane and do rides ever since I was a kid. I've been saying it, and I was fortunate enough to have some jobs that allowed me to buy an airplane and really go out on the limb and quit a job and really go out on the limb. And hopefully that the branch didn't break. So it's been really good.
Well, I think it's amazing when people say, oh yeah, you know, you're modern day barnstorming. I think that's kind of wrong, because really there's nothing modern about it. I mean, you're still out there doing the whole production just like a barnstormer would have done back in the 20s and 30s. I mean, really the only thing modern about it is you have a cell phone to that people call so you can book rides. But I mean, you're still out there grinding away and doing it the exact same way they used to. I mean, that's great.
Well, I appreciate it. That's kind of been the whole fun about it is, you know, I can load up my airplane with road signs and, you know, some different things. And I'll fly to an airport, throw some road signs out in front and start hopping rides. And last two seasons, I have a farmer and they're in Xenia that lets me fly out of their cornfield. And it's literally, they go and with their combine, make two swipes, and next thing I'm flying out of a cornfield for a month. And it's quite amazing. Corn stalks flying and dust and dirt, and everybody loves it. And, you know, I don't know if they love it as much as I do, but it is fun. And, it, you know, I've got to do quite a few different things with the airplane. And, you know, I've had a lot of fun with it.
Any idea how many people that you've given rides to in the last 2 years?
You know what, I'm this is a guesstimation, but I'm figuring close to 1,000 now. I did pretty well last year, and I don't have a number exactly, but, you know, what I just kind of can look at the weekends that I do, and you know, any given weekend is 45 people maybe to 60 people, you know, at a busy event. And sometimes it's even more. You know, I might get up to 100 for a 2 or 3 day event. But, yeah, I mean, when you're doing it 7 days a week and you're able to do, you know, 12 to 15 people in 1 day during the week, you know, on a Wednesday or Thursday, it starts adding up pretty quick. You know, my rides are pretty short, you know, they're 15 to 30 minute rides, and I can kind of schedule people during the week a lot easier than when you go to these bigger shows where I'm flying all day long. It's a lot different ride.
But, well, you certainly become familiar with the airplane, that's for sure, hopping all those rides in all kinds of conditions.
Yeah, I've definitely been all over. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. I get a little bit scared when I'm thinking about the, you know, gusty winds or crosswinds, and you're landing on an asphalt runway and things like that. You don't want to stack it, we call it. So, I keep myself, I'm on my toes all the time with the airplane. And that's one thing about it is that, you know, when you're flying an aircraft, very often you kind of become part of it. So I kind of know everything that's going on with the airplane. If it's shaking a little different or a vibration, and you just instantly know there's something, it wasn't the same as the flight before or the day before. So you're going to, investigate that and figure out what's going on so you don't have any issues.
You know, that's a great way to look at it. You know, I'm just sitting here thinking, we're talking to Scott Yoke and the P-51 earlier, and we're talking to you now with the Travel Air 4000, and, you know, it's a lot of the same. You know, it's the same type of thing, you know the airplane and all that. And also, you know, not to get too far off topic, but it's great how, you know, you guys are giving back to the community in the antique world as well. You know, I mean, I think that's a really awesome thing that you guys are doing, giving back and doing a flight or doing a show like you are over at Springfield. And a lot of it, you know, it's for the public. You know, they're loving it. You know, it's great.
Yeah,
that's all I have to say about that.
Well, it's true. You know, Hartman, it's a lot of work, and I promise myself I'm going to slow down after this event, but yeah, I'll probably come up with something. I got another big crazy idea, but I haven't brought it onto the city of Springfield yet. They told me not to until after this event's over, because, you know, what makes this event unique is that, one thing, Springfield Beckley Airport was a guard base, and last year was the first time they had anything for the public in over 30 years. And I'm not even affiliated with that airport. I just, you know, I wanted to barnstorm, and I'm trying to survive by giving rides. So, you know, how this all transpired is off of Andrew King and his group of friends that have these antique airplanes, and they all start heading out to Oshkosh and Broadhead, Wisconsin. So I get with Andrew, and I say, hey, how about I try to organize this big event? You guys bring the airplanes in, and we show it to the community. So he has been a big help on gathering, you know, these unique airplanes. And they're all our friends. You know, you guys all know them. And antique world is very small. So, you know, if I could bring them in, you offer them a little bit of food, a little bit of something, and everybody's going to bring their airplanes in. And then, you know, the marketing part of what I've done, you know, I've done a lot to the community by advertising. And I have advertising that they can come there for free and get that experience. You know, like I was saying before, you guys, like when we go to these fly-ins, it's all of us at the fly-ins together having a good time. We're all buddies. We all know each other. But this event is different because it's a very small community of fly-in, you know, pilots and aviators, but we bring the community into that. and show them what we have and what we can offer. And what it showed last year is the flight school at the airport, they had so many people inquire about learning how to fly. So I can't tell you how many people that came to the event and said they never even knew that that airport existed, and they live in Springfield. So this is what we need to do, because our problem is that the fences are up, the FAA, the ADO, Airport District Office, they keep making all these regulations and stopping everybody from really coming and learning about aviation and learning about flying without making you jump through, you know, it's like hopscotch. It's just hard to do. And, you know, fortunately, Springfield has allowed me to bring this event here, and hopefully we can grow it. I got a magician coming, a couple of magicians and a clown. So I'm kind of giving it a little carnival atmosphere, but hopefully 25 to 40 antique airplanes will be there. And a lot of hands-on where kids can get in the cockpits and mess with the controls and touch the airplanes a little bit with the owners there. So we have rockets, paper rockets we build. We build powered rockets with all the kids. And, you know, this year, the powered rockets, I can't say how many, but I'm giving, you know, quite a few powered rockets for free. Last year we had to charge that, but through donations and everything, I'm able to have a powered rocket workshop through a rocket club that's going to come there and teach these kids how to build these rockets with their parents. And they get to take a rocket home, and they'll get to launch it a different day, but that's kind of unique, I think.
Excellent, excellent.
Anyway, I keep rambling here, but...
You know, I'm hoping that our weather will... be better than what it was last year. You know, it was kind of rainy and overcast quite a bit. And of course, the way the weather has been, it's raining here in Dayton right now, Dewey. You know, I'm hoping that we end up having good weather. You know, I mean, I certainly plan on attending with my Waco, and I think my brother's attending with his, and my partner's attending with our Rearwin. So... Yeah. You know, hopefully we'll have at least three of the Marine airplanes will be there.
Yes, yes.
Well, that's what I'm hoping also. I mean, we're all hoping for great weather and something, you know, just because most of the aircraft that's coming are coming from Virginia or South Carolina and, you know, mostly East Coast. So, you know, the weather has to get good enough for them to bring these airplanes, you know, over the mountains or across the country here. And let alone, I mean, you guys are only 20 miles away, and it has to be, last year it wasn't good enough to even do that until late afternoon, so.
Right, right. Well, I'm hoping.
We might need to have a boat contest or something. Maybe everybody just brings their boat if it keeps raining.
Seaplane flying.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, make sure they come out and come down to Springfield and check out the Barnstorming Carnival. And that's this coming weekend, and that's going to be a heck of a show. And Dewey, thank you for coming on. Andy and I got to do a brief Oshkosh skit here. And is there anything else you want to say to the fans out there in Warbird Radio before you go?
The fans. Well, come and see Mr. Goodfolk and let me take you for a ride in Ace. And appreciate it. See you at the Barnstorming Carnival. You can look it up. It's BarnstormingCarnival.com. It's a website I made, so don't knock it too bad. It's all free. But feel free to give me a call also, and I can answer all the questions you need.
Hey, Dewey, it's the producer, Matt Jolly, just going to hijack the show. Listen, if I bring my dog and I promise to carry your gas can all day long, will you give me a ride at the end of the day?
Well, you know what? If you come and be a scooter always is Barnstorming Code. Scooter gets a free ride.
Oh, there you go. That's what I was hoping for.
Not to be confused with our early scooter.
Right. Not you, Mr. Yoke.
He can come help me carry the gas can.
Great Wall of Pepper is the perfect movie.
Isn't it? My son loves that movie, but only the parts, well, you know, where Susan Sarandon's not falling off the wing. They're not right. bashing the guy over the head with a 2x4. Well, you know, in that whole World War One part. But other than that,
it really wasn't Susan Sarandon. It was just a mannequin, Matt.
I know. And, you know, and sadly enough, my barnstorming buddy Mike Porter and I have watched that movie over and over again. And the more we have to drink, the more we like to pick it apart and figure out how they did everything, like that takeoff where the wheels fall off. And, oh, my God, we can go on and on and on.
Well, thank
yeah,
God.
That was a tiger moth.
Yeah, that's right. The fire-breathing tiger moth.
Yep, that's the best place for one in a pond.
Yep.
Oh man. Oh man. I think we're all out of time tonight. What do you know? Thanks, well, Dewey.
Thank you, Dewey.
Yeah, thanks, Dewey.
All right. Good night, Dewey.
Yeah, thank you guys. I really appreciate it. All right.
Hey, I do have one thing to tell you guys. If you want to help Scooter out with his Wells Fargo Works project, you can log on to the link that's right below it and click Vote for Scooter, and that will help him out immensely for that $25,000 grant.
You know, we got so wrapped up in
it. I know. You
forgot to mention that.
Completely forgot about it, but that's okay.
Well, thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah, so vote for Scooter tonight and help him
out. Vote for Scooter. Come see Dewey. Listen to our show. Andy?
I really have nothing to add to that. I just like to listen to Matt drink.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what he's doing back there. He's in his little roomy room, and he's boozing it up.
I'm in the studio.
you
My show is over.
Anyway, when you go to Oshkosh real quick,
mm-hmm.
you know, bring a generator.
Yeah.
If you got one. Last year, we didn't have the nice generator, the quiet ones.
What do you mean?
Funny. We had a 2-stroke generator. And the thing
I forgot.
Yes. Yes. And it would smog up the whole camp area. You didn't want it by your tent. And it's like, so you could find our camp simply by listening for the 2-stroke generator.
Yes. You had the $90 special, if I remember right, from cheap Chinese tools.
It worked, though.
It did work. It worked, but, you know, we ticked off a lot of people when they were trying to sleep.
But Andy.
When it's trying to power our air conditioner.
That's right. Andy slept like a baby, though, the whole night.
What time of day?
Now, usually during the air show.
During the air show, Andy usually falls asleep.
Oh, man. Are you sure you can't come this year, Hartman?
I am sure, but I will be there in spirit.
Oh, man.
You know, well.
We're going to come grab you like you did Chris Henry that year and just haul you away with a black hood over your head.
Get out of the car now!
All right. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Are you going to play our music?
I am playing your music, and it's that time of the night where I'm supposed to say that the Hartman and Hines Show is a production, sadly, of WarbirdRadio.com. And you can find out more about them by logging onto WarbirdRadio.com, clicking on the link under the Hartman and Hines Show. They will both, sadly, not be at Oshkosh this year, but Andy and his loving brother will be. The better-looking one, that is. So you can find them at AirVenture this year at the Warbird Radio family trailer, better called The Trailer.
Nice.
That's all I've got for you. Good night, everybody.
Folks, on behalf of Warbird Radio, I'm Mike Buzzard Hartman.
And I'm Andy Ace Hines.
And thanks for listening to the Hartman and Hines Show. Tune in next time, and I won't be on. That's it.
That AirVenture. Good night, everybody.
Folks.